Okay, fine. So I'll summarize what we've done as much as I can. Basically, you have multiple Segun Shas that deal with this question of Seiya. If you don't do an Isser yourself, instead you aid in the performance of an Avera, is that considered halachically significant or not? So we have different pieces of evidence. We have our Gemara here in Daf Chof Bet Aman Aleph, which it said that had dealt with the case of putting on a medical salve on the eye and having a non-Jew do it on Yom Tov, and the Jew blinks it in. So you had two positions. The first position, the Gemara suggested that should be prohibited. But the Gemara answers, the consensus of the Gemara is that that is, in fact, permitted, because even though, yes, the Jew is enabling the medicine to go in by blinking it in, that's only considered misayaya. That's only considered aiding it, but not considered performing the issue yourself, and therefore misayayin, but mamesh, is halachically insignificant. Similarly, in the Gemara and Shabbos, in the case of Shnaim Shah Sa'uha, there's a series of machlokot, but the way we paskin is that any time you have two people who could not have done the malacha, if they do it together, and therefore they're able to perform the malacha, then they are chayev. But if one person could do the malacha, and one person could not do the malacha, but nevertheless he is involved in, I don't know, helping carry something versus a rabbim, they're pater, because since it was that guy at least is pater, because it's irrelevant. The fact that he made it easier for the other person to carry is not significant, because the other guy could have carried it by himself.
That was actually disputed. You had different opinions on who was chayav.
Right. Now there's three day, there's multiple day in the Gemara. La halacha, they're both pater, right? Sorry, the machlokes in Gemara, whether, right, they're both chayev, they're both pater, one's chayev, one's pater. But we conclude there as well that misayayim b'mamesh, that the weaker guy is entirely pater. That's true for two out of the three day, for one of the day it's not, but for at least for two out of the three day, that is true. It's insignificant. You have another case in Erchen about avoda, which we'll leave out for now. The real outlier case is the case of Mako, where the Gemara in Mako had said that if someone shaves his peyot or he shaves his beard in a prohibited fashion, so then he violates the Yisur. But even if he allows someone else to cut his hair and cut his beard, he's chayev. And Ravashi had said he's chayev because of Misayev of Divrei Hakol. So how do you resolve these Gemara? You have certain Gemara that imply that Misayev is insignificant, and then you have this Gemara in Makot, which implies a Messiah is significant. So, we've seen a lot of nuances within the positions, so I'm going to try to just take the main positions. If we take all the positions, we can divide them basically as follows. One group of Mefarshim will say that the rule is Messiah ein bo mamish, and Makot is just the outlying, outlier case. That there's a special Gzeres HaKasuv in the case of makif and nikaf, then not only can you not cut your hair in a prohibited way, you can't have it cut, and therefore, in that case, uniquely, misayaya is chayav. Or the way they'll put it, in other words, is even if you did absolutely nothing, it would be usur. The reason the Gemara ends up saying you need a help in some sort of way, or at least the way Mefarshim understand it, you have to help in some sort of way just to justify getting malchus for it. But simply the act of allowing someone to cut your hair already violates the Isser. That's the Gzeres HaKasuv. And therefore, that's the outlying case. Really, Misayeh is insignificant except for this, which is, shall we say, result-oriented rather than action-oriented. At the other extreme, you have all the Mefarshim who say, no, Misayeh, in all cases in Shas, is potentially significant. The question is, how much did you help? Did you help in a very active way or in a less active way? So some of the Rishonim say, well, if you are very actively involved, then Misayeya is always significant, no matter what we're talking about. If you're not so involved, so then Misayeya ain't bo mamish. And then they just go through each case and say this was more of a help, this was less of a help, etc. And they sort of make quantitative differences. Other Mefarshim, we saw there's a Machlokas Tazner and Biki Beger, distinguish when you're involved, because you can be involved in one of two stages. You can either be involved in advance, where you enable someone to do the Isser, but once the Isser starts, you're not involved anymore. You've just set the groundwork for it. On the other hand, you could actually be involved in the Isser itself. Now, each of those is potentially more machmir or more makel than the other. On the one hand, if you set the groundwork, so you might think it's more machmir, because while you were setting the groundwork, the other person wasn't involved at all. So there was a moment where you did everything. As opposed to, let's say, two people carrying something, which is a rabbim, you are actively involved in the Isser itself, not just setting the groundwork. So in that sense, it's more machmir. But on the other hand, it's more makel, because during that act, both people are involved. So again, setting the groundwork is more machmir because you're the only one involved, but more makel because it's not the Shasa Isser. And during the Shasa Isser, it's more machmir because you're doing the Isser itself, but it's more makel because there was no moment where you acted independently of the other person. So Rabbi Kiviger and the Taz argue on which of those is worse. Rabbi Kiviger assumes that setting the groundwork is less bad, and being involved during is worse, and the Taz suggests the opposite. So that was, and there were a lot of other positions that we raised, but let's leave it at that for now. What we dealt with last week was perhaps the most common halachal maisa, or the most talked about halachal maisa implication of this, which is the question of cutting nails, or having a non-Jew cut a nail on Shabbos, or Yom Tov, for a woman to go to the mikvah. So it starts off with the question of whether having long nails, bichlal, is a chatzitza or not. It seems to be that Shulchan Aruch seems to say it isn't maker hadin, but luchumra it is, and therefore, if a woman has a long nail, so then we would want her to cut it. So what happens if her leil tefillah falls out on Shabbos and she forgot to do it? So then we have a guy do it. Now the Taz argues on that for two reasons, and he says, first of all, it makes no sense because cutting the nails is not really, the nails aren't a chatzitz at all, so why are you getting involved? But more importantly, he says, this is misayeya, and we paskin misayeya yesh bo mamish if you are doing something active, right? She's putting out her fingers. She's setting the groundwork. That's worse, right? This is the opposite. As we said, Rabbi Kiviger says the opposite. But the Taz says, yeah, if you set the groundwork, that's very significant. They couldn't have done it without you. The woman put out her hand. She got it ready to be cut. Therefore, it is asur. It's misayeya sheyesh bo mamish. And the Shach says, what are you talking about? We paskin, like the Rama, according to the Ritva, that misayeya is never significant except by makef v'nikaf, by the haircutting case, because of exeris hakasuv. And therefore, it doesn't matter the woman put out her hand. That is totally insignificant, misayeya in bo mamish. Rov of the poskim, paskim like the shach, against the taz, and therefore the halach l'maisa, the poskim, say that, in fact, that's what you should do. But that hangs, really, on this question. So that was what we focused on last week. Again, I'm skipping over some of the details in it, but
does it make a difference that the action that they're doing is in order to do a mitzvah that's specific to that time? In other words, all the other cases,
right? There's a lot of other factors to it, which is the mitzvah factor, which is the question of is it really a nisr daraisa because it's maybe tamalchus nisr gufa, right? Or well, not really, but you know, sort of meaning. Whatever, I mean, gozes might always be a malachal chance, or chalagubas, and maybe it's a bit different. There's a lot of, like, little factors that are involved, yes, but I'm focusing just on the sayyah part of it.
With the sayyah, would there be a difference in halacha if it's a problem versus to do it?
Possibly, right? But it depends what you think the sayyah is, right? So there is a discussion, which I'm not going to get back into now, which is how usher is misayah. Is it usher midar raisa or is usher midar rabbanan? And if it's midar raisa, presumably it won't help you. If it's rabbanan, it will help you. That is part of the discussion in the mafarshim here.
So, yeah, I mean, example of the woman, the other person can't do it without her, whereas the preparation part.
Right, but again, according to Vigvager, the fact that she's just preparing it, when a woman goes for a manicure, once she puts her hands down, she's not supposed to move, she's not doing anything, right? So is that... So. Right, according to Rick Vager, that's nothing because you only set the groundwork and you weren't involved. And according to the Chazon Ish, that is called misayeya because she's holding her hands in a very specific position, and that's considered a more active type of involvement. But again, it depends. Is that really active? Or the Chazon Ish thinks it is because you're holding your hands in a certain way. Most poskim would tell you no because you set your hands up there, but now you're not moving, so now you're not doing anything. You're being passive. But that was sort of the machlokas that we saw last week. So what we'll see now the sources that are left look longer than they are, but that's basically because on the last page there's a whole tshuva in the Rav Paalim, which I gave you just for interest's sake. But we'll look at the last case. This is actually sort of standalone, so that's good. Look at number 18. This is where we're up to. This is the other place where this comes up in halacha, very prominently, is Simen Shin Chof Ches, Sif Gimel. So this is in Hilchos Refua on Shabbos. So the halacha is as follows. Kol maka shel cholol, d'hainu meshenayim v'lifneim. So any internal wound, which in the time of the Gemara, and the time of Shulchan Aruch, they're defining it from the teeth inward, v'shenayim atzman b'chlal, mechal lo'avet ha-Shabbos. Right? Internal disease are considered life-threatening. Now, I don't want to get into that question now. Why? Right? Is that true nowadays? Is it not true? Is that because they didn't know what was going on internally, but we, you know, sometimes can know that things are internal and are not life-threatening? That's a discussion another time, but the assumption of the Gemara is that any internal disease is safek b'kulach nevesh, you can be mechal Shabbos. V'daf question is kalkal echad me'evar ma'pinimim machmas maka uav chayotze. So this is if one of the internal organs is ruptured, is sick. But a mere, right, like a stomach ache, you just don't feel well, that's not called. Or that's not really illness, that's not going to be pikuach nevesh, obviously. Okay, the Ramah says, miu. But despite the fact that mechush, okay, let's just set the groundwork for here. There's a iser against refuah on Shabbos, right? Now this is one of the most misquoted things, so it always has to be reiterated. It doesn't apply to a chola she yesh bo sakana because that's pikuach nefesh. Now most people think it does apply to a chola she ein bo sakana. That's wrong. It does not apply to a chola. So anyone who is sick, there is no iser refuah on Shabbos. The Isser of Von Shabbos refers only to a bari, to someone who's healthy. Why is someone healthy taking medicine? Because it's this category called mechosh, someone who doesn't feel well. Someone who doesn't feel well, halachically, is called healthy. What the way the Gemara distinguishes is someone becomes sick with non-life-threatening illness, such that the Isser of Refuah doesn't apply to them, at which point they reach nofil and mishkav, right? They're bedridden. Or, as Rosh Hechter says in modern parlance, it would be anyone who's not functioning properly, right? If you have light sensitivity, for example, right? If Shachter thinks a migraine, right, is considered a chole and not a mechush. Right? A regular headache where you just have a headache but you function, right, is mechush. You're halakhically healthy. A migraine where you have light sensitivity or sensitivity to sound and therefore you can't open your eyes, you can't walk straight because you can't really open your eyes, you can't hear sound, you're not functioning. At that point, he says, what's the difference between whether you're not functioning because you're bedridden and you're not functioning because you have sensitivity to light? So a mechush is considered a bari, it's considered healthy, and therefore he can't take medicine on Shabbos. Or as I once heard from, I think I was visiting Penn my first semester in YU, and the rabbi gave the succinct summary, which was, he gets a lot of questions of refuah on Shabbos, and he always tells people, if you were healthy enough to come find me to ask whether you can take an Advil, you're not sick enough to take an Advil. If you couldn't have gotten up and you couldn't take me, then you would have been allowed to take it, right? If you're functioning enough that you can walk around and find someone to ask, right, you are not a chole. The Ramah comments, however, but let's say someone has a toothache. So a toothache, you would assume, whatever it is, right? It's not, you know, even though Shulchan Aruch just said, a tooth illness would be bifnim. But let's say someone just has a toothache, so it's not life-threatening. Still, right, it really, really hurts, and you want to get it out. Like, you really, you know, it's, I don't know, it's at that point where you want to pull it out. So Ramah says, what you do is, tell a non-Jew to take out the tooth. So the problem here, obviously, is, right, your dentist isn't going to be able to take out your tooth if you turn your mouth away, you run away, right? I mean, he could strap you down, but in most cases, right, you willingly sit in the dentist's chair, and it's an isser, daraisa, on Shabbos, presumably, right? Whatever it exactly the Isser is, you're causing blood, so it's whatever, it's like a gozes, it's a nitzil neshama, it's chavala, it's a few things, whatever it is, right? And you're helping mitzayeya to help pull out the teeth, so why are you allowed to do that? So the Taz comments, says, so we, as we've seen, the Taz is of the position that Misayeya is halachically significant throughout Kol HaTerakula. The only difference is at what stage did you, right, were you involved? If it was, you know, So the Taz takes that position here as well. He says, I understand that Shulchan Aruch says this, and Ramah says this, but why? As we said before, the Taz holds, what's the worst type of Messiah that is halachically significant? Is where you set the groundwork. That's what he understands the case in Mako. That's what he thinks when Messiah is significant, when you set the whole scene so the other person can do the Isser. But isn't that what you're doing? How is this different than allowing the guy to cut your hair? Here you're allowing the guy to pull out your tooth. Right? And if you think like the Taz, that the worst type of Messiah is when you set the groundwork for the Isser to happen, well, here you are again. Now in Achanami, you could prove the opposite from our Gemara in Beitza, which said that you could allow him to put the medical salve, right? Right? So without getting to the Taz's whole analysis, the Taz says, look, I understand there's the problem in Beitza, but the way he ends up working out all the sugyas is that we distinguish between cases where you set up the ability to perform the Isser in advance. If you do that, that is a significant Misayah. Yeah? You have to explain away the Gemara and Beitza, and we've seen different ways that you can do that. I'll quote probably the most compelling, which is the Shidu Mikubetzes, which is even though you set the groundwork, right, you keep your eye open for the salve to come in, you don't really, because you open your eye, he drops in the salve, and then you blink. But you were going to blink in 3 seconds anyways. It's a reflex. You have to blink. And therefore, even though, yes, Lemaisa, you set it up so that you opened your eyes so you could put in the salve, then you blinked it in. Since blinking, you can't go more than 10, 15 seconds without blinking anyways, so blinking is not significant because, okay, even if you hadn't blinked it in, it would have gone in, right? I mean, I don't know if their salves are exactly like our eye drops, right? Our eye drops is not really true. If you blink at the wrong second, it stops it. But I guess if you put a salve on the eye and it's sort of thicker and it sits there, if whatever you blink, it's going to go into the eye or something like that. I'm not really sure. But therefore, Jim Gubetta says, since you were going to blink anyways, the fact that you blinked at that moment is sort of irrelevant because, okay, you could have waited 3 seconds and you would have blinked anyways. Fine.
Can we back up one step?
Yeah.
If there was no Achim there, okay, and he had this terrible toothache, is he allowed to do something about the toothache?
Nothing.
He just has to suffer.
Sounds like that.
Okay. So it's not a pikuach nefesh to the point. He's not to the point that he can pull out his own tooth.
Right. Why?
No, for sure not. If it was pikuach nefesh. Right. He must be talking about a case where it's not. Right. Meaning, the Shulchan Aruch just said that tooth diseases are chal, right? So we must be talking about something that isn't, right? I don't, you know, how exactly you draw the differences between cases that are and cases that aren't is clearly a case that isn't, or this wouldn't make sense. Right? It's a mechosh of a toothache.
Right. Or is he saying that you could do it yourself?
No, it's not at all, because
it's better to have an akum.
No, because they're almost saying mihu, right? And I mean, the Beis Yosef, it's clear. I mean, Shulchan Aruch had said, if you have a chalal internally, that's pikuach nefesh. If you have a mechush, right, then it's not. So Ramah says, so that mechush, I mean, if you just have a toothache, which is not considered a chalal, right, it's not considered a wound, it's not considered death, you know, deathly, it's not considered life-threatening, but it is mechush, so in that case, you can't violate Shabbos yourself, because it's not as a narasa, but you can't have a guy do it. And the Taz challenges that. He says, it doesn't make any sense, because he Lishitaso took the position that we distinguish, and we say that if you're setting the groundwork, that's significant Messiah, and therefore it's Aser. Mishnah Brewer, on the other hand, quoting majority position, like the Shach that we saw before, held that no, in general, all Messiahs and Shas are Mutter, the exception is haircutting, everything else is Mutter, and that's why, while the Taz did not allow a non-Jewish woman to cut the woman's nails on Shabbos, he just said, look, go to the mikveh with clean nails, and that's what the Ikar Din is, but the Shach had said, no, allow the non-Jew to cut the nails on Shabbos. The Mishnah Brura, following that Kav Chashiva, right, following that direction, says the same thing here, that the Taz is incorrect, the Rama is correct. You are allowed to ask the Gaon to take it because we say Misayein b'mamish. That's what he says. Afa gavdu posech piv umamti eshino. Even though you open up your mouth and allow him to get your tooth, lo tio kaimelon Misayein b'mamish. It's insignificant. V'taz marach binyan zevet. Daid alachim rav ahar be'achronim. Daid dem g'shulchan aruch. But he says most of the achronim are lenient like the Shulchan Aruch. Now, it's not just true in Ashkenaz, I just gave you in 21, that the Ben Ish Chai, writing in Baghdad, also says that the minhag was to follow the Shach, and not the Taz. Right? This isn't, sometimes you'll have, you know, Ashkenazi, Sephardi divide, here you don't, right? You have a Taz, the Taz seems to be the outlier, the Shach becomes accepted in the Ashkenazi world, as Mishnah Berurah records, and the Ben Ish Chai tells you, Nahagnu Po, Irenu, something. Miavu Seinu, the Horos Kisfaris. Ben Ish Chai, the father of like Sephardi, modern Sephardi Psak.
Modern, exactly modern. He tended to follow the Ashkenazim.
I mean, in certain chumros, yes. In Nida, he followed them in terms of certain things. So he says, we follow the Shach, but he said, just to be Machmir, what do you do? So if you want to be Yotze the Taz also, what did the Taz say? The Taz says it's a problem because you, the woman, put out her hand. So you want to solve it. So don't put out your hand. What do? Train the non-Jew who's going to be working there to pull the woman's hand out of her pocket, right? Or whatever, dresses don't have pockets. Whatever, just to pull her hand. Right? And the non-Jew will not just, you know, cut the nail, but she'll actually take her hand and cut the nail. Because he said, L'chora, according to that, it might even work according to the Taz, because the Taz said it's only a problem if you set the groundwork yourself. But if you teach the non-right, if all the woman does is says, please cut my nail, but she does nothing, she does no action whatsoever, the non-Jew takes her hand and puts it on the, whatever, on the table, and then cuts the nail, presumably, even according to Taz, that would work. So fundamentally, he paskins like the Shach, but he says there is ways, even according to Taz, to get out of it. I mentioned in passing last week that this, right, I don't know how often you get such a toothache that you go to the dentist to have him pull out your tooth on Shabbos, but there are a lot of nafkaminas for it. One of them that comes up all the time is if someone's in the hospital for a non-life-threatening illness and they want to take an x-ray, right? So for an x-ray, you have to go into the machine, you have to put on the apron, you have to stand in exactly the right way so they can take it. That is, you're setting the groundwork. That is what the Taz says, Misayesh Yesh B'mamesh, according to the Taz, that should be usur. Because even though the guy is doing the x-ray, you're setting the groundwork. They couldn't do the x-ray if you didn't, right, move in whatever way they need you to move. According to the Shach, according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, setting the groundwork is totally insignificant. Misayeya is insignificant. We paskin, that's fine. And therefore, even though it's not life-threatening, you're allowed to, even if you think x-rays are an Isser Daraisa, doesn't matter, because you're not doing the Isser Daraisa yourself. You're just sitting in whatever way, and then the technician is doing the x-ray. But right, there are a lot of cases that are like this, where, if this comes up with micropigmentation, right? If someone needs stitches, right? So, let's say the stitch is a case of pichuach nefesh, fine. But then at the end, right, there might be the stitches that are not pichuach nefesh, right? They're just whatever to make it heal faster or something like that. Well, at this point, you're not doing anything, right? The guy is doing it, but you're not moving, right? You're keeping your depends what type of stitches we're talking about. Stitches, whatever it is, all these different cases, right? If it's pikuach nefesh, pikuach nefesh. If it's not pikuach nefesh, right? All these cases where you have to stand still, you have to, enable the person to do whatever they need to do, right? According to Taz, it's problematic. According to Shach, according to Mishnah Berurah, according to Ben Ish Chai, it's not problematic.
But you're basing on the fact that we're saying psak changes based on modern science. In other words, you've gone an extra step. Because we've already learned that anything internal is pikuach nefesh. The fact that we now know that it's not pikuach nefesh does not necessarily mean that it's not pikuach nefesh. And so those x-rays may be permissible.
Yes, I'm just...
Because
Yes, I am just swallowing that. I'm just swallowing the question. But yeah, meaning obviously each case we're gonna have to ask is it pikuach nefesh? How do we define pikuach nefesh? Has thing have things changed? How do we know? How do you define suffix? There's a million questions you'll ask. But I'm just saying, just in the Sayyeh level, right? And we could look. We could come up with cases, right? Meaning you could come up with a case which is not a cholish yesh bo sakana, right? Which is not a maka at all, right? You could come up with a woman who's pregnant, right? So. I don't know. Okay, if there's a real threat to the baby, so it's already pikuach nevesh, fine. Or either pikuach nevesh or mutar midin chalav shabbos achas as machlag rishonim. But you come up with a case where it's not a sakana to the baby, right, or the mother, but it's, you know, there's a reasonable health concern, right? So that's internal, but it's not a makat chalav. It's not a internal maka. It's just it happens to be internal because it's about the baby, right? Fine, right? An ultrasound. Okay, fine. Right, we can come up with cases. So all those things are going to be functions of this machlokas. The Aruch HaNeir treats this issue, and he just notes that the Shach is drawing on the Ritva, right? The Ritva had quoted the Rama, who had said this, right? That Misayeh is just is only significant in Makif and Nikav, but he notes that the Shachan doesn't really have the Ritva, at least not in its entirety, when they're quoting it, right? And he notes, because this whole Machlokes is itself in the Ritva, because the Ritva quotes two positions. One was the position of the Yad Rama, of the who had said that only by Nikaf, only by the haircutting case is Misayeh significant. And the other one was the Ritva and made it distinguish between different types of Misayeh. He said, Dakushim and Beitza Hiksha Ritva, right? The Ritva had asked, why is it in Beitza? It's significant in other places. It's insignificant in Makot, it's significant. Viteres Rishon Lachalgmin Misayeh. The first answer, he distinguished between two different types of Misayeh, which again, you could follow all the different ways, helping a lot, helping a little, helping before, helping during, etc. Vachar Kach Chosav Lashitas Rama Levi, and the Rama had said it depends whether you're talking about haircutting or anything else. And the Shach ends up following the decision of Rama Levi. And the first position of the Ritva that he distinguished between different levels of Misayeh, that's just the Taz. He just notes that the Taz's invention or suggestion that the difference is before or during, that's the Taz's suggestion. The Ritva itself had said, he distinguished between big helping and little helping. Because he had followed the position, quoted in the Shizuk of Etzes, that opening and closing the eye is insignificant because you're going to blink anyway. So Lufiz Eladina Tzarch Ian, Imhachta Psychos Peva, Shotas Yad, Litol Tzirpanaim, Domili Nikaf. He said, once I've pointed out that this whole discussion really just boils down to which line of the Ritva you take, so let me come back to this question of opening the mouth for the tooth or the case of the nida. He said, So he says, well, if you take the, and he said, you're right. If you take the position of the Ritva, number one, which is like the Taz, then it would be Asur Sheino, Osu Bishum Pam, Lahazman, Saras Kazem, Lo Lutzor Chiluach, and Lo Dome Lamamish, Ubozech, the Gam Lozeno, Dome Mamish, Yosu Regilus Lamit of Toch, Ainu of Toch, Apek, Bikashepish, Bikazeh. Said, if you're going to distinguish between how much you're helping, so the Taz distinguished between before and during. The Ritva he distinguished between really helping and not helping. But okay, fine. So blinking was considered insignificant. But opening your mouth for the dentist to pull out your tooth, presumably according to the Ritva, would be no worse than allowing the barber to cut your hair. So yes, according to position one in the Ritva, the halacha would be like the Taz, not because of the difference between preparing or doing it during, but the difference of how much you're involved. The Gamash got the Vashach, the Shiny Nikov, the Chaimen Adar, near the Talavishi has already shown him. The Zedavka, Perish Ram Halevi, Shavsha Ritva, Iskimimo, Varavid got the Vim, come near the Sheshidah Shan Losfir Ling, and other Ritva, Perish Ram Halevi. The Shach would be following Ram Halevi, which he notes is not Muskam. The Gam Ram near the Losfir Ling, Mash Gazuk as the Mishnah, Achin, Alko Pana Lakasham Extra Tazal, Esios, Vishim Hoschaim, Lahotzi Shena, the Nachar, Vishaz, Mach Nikov, the Hakal, the Shon, the Hoschaim, Sweet Mash Ritva, Bishim Ram Halevi, the Davka Hako, Chayev, very Rips, Torah. Etc. Right, so he notes that this machlokas, at the end of the day, comes down to the Shach and Taz, comes down to Ritva and the Ram Halevi, Then we note that the Rama, that if you want to follow the Ritva, instead of just the Taz, and distinguish between how much you're helping, so then you really would have to wonder, and the Taz presumably would be right, that it would be usur in the case of the tooth, in the case of Nida. But again, as he points out, this machloka shach and Taz, whether they knew it or not, seems to just be a machlokas rishonim. Okay, so I here have, now I have what's left of this Makarashi. You know what? Okay, let me see. I'm just going to skip to 26. If we have time, I'll do 23 to 25. If not, you can look at it if you're interested. That's specifically the Misayaya and the Kadshim case. But the Rav Polem, this is again the Ben Ish Chai, in 26, I think has another interesting take on this whole sugya. So far we've been talking about the question of Malkus and whether you violate an Isser. The Rav Polem was asked in the question of tshuva. This was his question. Reuven, yesh lo kizba uvita sha'adayin hi yonekes mimeno v'ashem anashochet v'shochar baboker v'ach asha shochar es ha'im. Right, so you had Reuven who had two animals, a mother and a daughter. And the Shimon, the Shochet, came and shechted the child in the morning, and then shechted the mother. Achliot shech sheha kizba higdola v'chazakama od lohaya Shimon yachol lichafta l'shachtahu levad. Right, so presumably the Shochet violated the prohibition of Oso Vespino. Right, you're not allowed to shech the mother and a child in the same day. Okay, but what happened? The mother was really, really strong. So Shimon couldn't hold the animal down himself. So what did he do? Ashabal Levi the kafazasa. So then he called Levi over, and Levi held down the animal and allowed him to shecht. V'achzav kol kochol if ne'af shochet u'pasha yado hashochet v'shachta u'pshitalan da shochet avad yisur delav doso v'ez. But no. So for sure the shochet violated the isser. He shechted the mother. He shechted the child. But here was this question: istapaknu b'Levi im avar. Gam ihu al halav. Right now, Levi came to the Ben Ish Chai and said, "Did I violate Oso Vespino because I was misayaya in the shechita of the mother?" Mishum de kaftav achad v'alach neshochet. I love ma'ase di day love a shochet achal lishchot kal b'mnei shayis a gadol v'chazakam ma'od v'adam chalash odil ma'im kol ze kevan. The Levi lo achad b'sakin v'shochat lo avar yisur. He said, "Is the fact that he couldn't have shechted without me is that significant or not?" Now, there's also an Esser, at least Midir Rabbanan, for the Shochet to eat the food on that day, right? Because we don't want him to be Nehene. Does that spill over to Levi as well? So he says, Tshuva, Hein, Emes, Damrin, Megamar, Beshabbos, Uveitzach, Haved, Mesei, Ein, Bo, Mamish, Mikol, Mekom, Haitmar, Bimakos, Davcho, Avedach, Medachanikov, etc. Right, so first he notes, well, there's a whole machlokes in the Gemara, right? In Beitza it implies, in Beitza and Shabbos implies Misayein Bo Mamish. In the case of haircutting, it implies Misayea Yesh Bo Mamish, right? We've seen that. So the next paragraph, he quotes yet another case. I'll leave that one out. Look at the third paragraph, fourth paragraph. V'hashta hu adin v'nidon ha-she'ela. He takes the position of those Rishonim who distinguish between helping a lot or helping a little, and he says, well, what is this case? This is helping a lot. You held the animal down. And therefore, he says, you need tshuva. And then he says, how would you solve the stirot? As we've already seen. So here, Now, Paulim just notes, this isn't just a question for Malkus, it's also a spiritual question, right? Does the person need tshuva? Did he violate the Isser? Does he get other kenosos? Right? So this is just a slight expansion of what we've seen, right? So far we've seen it, is it Usser and the formal, and you get Malkus. Here we introduce, okay, but there's obviously more implication that. Is there tshuva? Are there kenosos? All those things, will they spill over to Misayeya? Well, the Rav Paulim assumes that whatever you hold of Misayeya in general will spill over to this. Now, you could have distinguished, you could have said, right, Misayeya is not enough for Malkus, but you still violated an Isser, and therefore you need to do tshuva. Right, you could have said that, but he assumes that that's not true. That whatever you hold in the Saye in general will spill over to the more spiritual realm of tshuva and kenosos and things like that.
Okay, I'm not understanding the case of where he's done anything wrong, because unless he held both the mother and the child.
No, because you don't have to, it doesn't have to be the same person. Once the animal has been shechted, the mother, I should have clarified that. Once the animal, the mother has been shechted or the child has been shechted,
yes,
the other animal can't be shechted by anybody. And the second person who shechts it, right, violates. So even though he wasn't involved in the first one, it doesn't matter. The Isser is the killing of the second one.
Okay, so the boat was shed.
Therefore, it doesn't matter if he was involved in the first one. It's only, right, the Isser is always on the second one. Okay.
Assuming he knows.
If not, it'd be shogeg and whatever. But here we're talking about someone presumably he knows. Okay. 27-28, I want to throw out thought questions, and then I'll briefly do the kachshon one. My thought questions are as follows. We've basically finished the question of Misayeya in Isirin. There are two other places in Halacha that Misayeya comes up. And no one that I've seen connects these contexts of Misayeya, but it seems to me that they are conceptually linked. So one of them is what we call... is a category sort of invented by the Balei HaTosfos, implied in, possibly in a Gemara, but it's machlokes. So there's an Isser, as we know, d'oraisa called lifnei iver. According to the way most poskim understand it, though Reb Rabinovich has an article in Tumen where he argues that this is a historical mistake and no one ever held this way. But fine. According to the way he has often things like this. According to most poskim, you only violate the Isser of Lifnei Iver Daraisa with what's called Trei Avre Dinahara. That is a Gemara. But the way most poskim understand that is if without me, the other person could not have done the Isser at all, and I therefore am necessary, so that's Lifnei Iver Daraisa. But if the guy could have done it without me, but I just help out, what's called Chad Avre Dinahara, right? The imagery is, if there's trey food on one side of the river, and he's on the other side of the river, and I give it to him, that's called trey avrei dinahara, he couldn't have gotten it without me. But if it's on this side of the river, and he asked me, can you pass me the non-kosher food, and I give it to him, so even though I made it easier for him, that's not daraisa. Midaraisa, that's mutter. But Tosfo says that's midarabanan, that's asr. What he calls that is misayeya. Right? He calls that the isr darabanan misayeya. Now, if you asked me, I would have said that that notion of Misayeya seems to emerge from our sugya of Misayeya, right? In some way, shape, or form, right? Now, if you enable the Isser, like you couldn't have been done without you, so that's called Lifnei Iver. But what is Tosfos saying? If I do something significant, right? I'm actively involved. I did something significant, even if it wasn't necessary. So then, that's Misayeya, and that's called significant. I'm part of the Isser, even though it could have been done without me. I assume that that notion, right, is some sort of function of this, right, that derabanan concept, Misayeya, is some function of this, right? Normally, we say Misayeya ein bo mamish, but that, right, that's a different type of question. That is, did I violate myself? Right, meaning if you think about what's going on in a classic case of Misayeya, the way we paskin is Misayeya ein bo mamish, right? If I do it myself, I'm sorry, from my perspective, the person's Misayeya, I'm not violating. Who's violating? The person who's doing the main part of the Isser. But what Tosfos is saying is, on a spiritual level, right, even if I'm not chayiv, I'm chayiv rabbinically for having enabled him to sin. Right? It seems to me just the flip, or the corollary of our sugya, is I'm not really liable for my own sin, right, because Misayeya ein bo mamish. But what does Misayeya ein bo mamish mean? It isn't my sin. It is his sin. But therefore, on a spiritual level, if you ask the question, is this sort of lifnei iver like, because I enabled him to violate the sin, the answer would be, well, maybe yes. Right? So I assume, even though no one's pointed out, that what Tosfos is doing is picking up on the corollary, right? Or a potential corollary, or filling in the blank, right? Which is, yes, misayeh is ein bo mamish, meaning I didn't do anything wrong myself. So in our cases, I allowed a goy to do something. So for him, it's mutter. The only question is, did I do something? But if the person violating is not a goy, it's a Jew. So in a chanami, I didn't do anything wrong. But I did help. And isn't that problematic? Because it's not the goy doing something, it's the Jew doing something wrong, and I now enabled that.
Except we have the case of the carrying, where one guy was able to carry it by himself, and the other could not. But we said that the guy who could not but help is pater.
He's pater. But the question is, there's pater, and then there's mutter. And what Tosa is pointing out is, on the level of Shabbos liability, it might be mutter. But on a derabbanan extension of lifnei iver, you're liable, right? It's not what Livnei Iver is saying. It's not my problem. It's his problem. But I can't allow him to do something wrong, right? Or I can't help him do something wrong. It's not Livnei Iver, right? He could have done it without me, but it is Misayeya, right?
Okay, it complicates the whole situation. We weren't sure if Misayeya in the first case was the right or the other not. If we go back to the Karen case, where the guy
Tosfos is inventing an Isser Misayeh Derabbanan in a different context. But I just wonder whether what Tosfos is really doing is asking the question we never asked, which is, all the sugyas of Misayeh are really asking the question, did you, meaning the person who did the insignificant act, which aided the Isser, but he himself didn't do the Isser, is he liable from the vantage point of the Isser? But there's another question, which is, am I in any way, shape, or form responsible for having helped someone else do an Isser? So the sugyas of Misayeya tell you that from the vantage point of your personal violation, you are not liable. But Tosfos is introducing that on a rabbinic level, there is something called Misayeya, that I am responsible for his spirituality. I just assume Tosfos must be, right, filling in the blank of what did we actually mean when we said Misayeya and Momamish? Do we mean that I'm totally not in the picture? I'm just not personally liable. But in a case when the person I'm enabling to violate the Isser is actually forbidden to do what he's doing, am I at any level spiritually culpable for his spiritual well-being? And Tosfos says, yes, and therefore uses the same word to say, in that sense, Misayeya, you are Chayev. I assume Tosfos must have assumed this was part of the picture. I don't know. I gave you in 28 that, in fact, some of the distinctions that you find in Misayeh, you actually do find, which tend to indicate that maybe there is some connection, because you get a discussion in the post-skim of whether Misayeh is significant if you set the groundwork or only if you're involved during, right? So the Ksav Sofer's position is that it's only Misayeh if you help during the Isser, not setting the groundwork, which is the position of Rabbi Kvi Eger. Right, that Misayeya is only significant if you're involved during the Isser, not before. So again, that type of language, I don't know whether they're connected or not. I just find it interesting that the question that Arsugi never asked about, which is not am I liable for the Aveira, but am I liable for the other person's Aveira? So one way of reading Tosfos is to say he's filling in that blank, which is saying, yes, you are at some level spiritually liable. On the other hand, if you take the Ksav Sofer, you could say no. If you combine the Ksav Sofer and Rabbi Eger, they're exactly the same. I'm Chayev for his spiritual being only if I'm involved during the Isser, but not before, just like Misayeya in general, right? So according to the Ksav Sofer, maybe they're not complements, maybe they're identical, right? That just like I'm personally liable when I'm involved in the Isser, during the time of the Isser, but not before, so I'm liable for him spiritually when I'm involved in the Isser during and not before, right? According to Rabbi Eger, right, if you combine Rabbi Eger and the Ksav Sofer, you would end up that maybe they're identical and not, you know, complementary. I don't know. Well, I just find it suggestive that they use the same word. They do seem to be dealing with the same question from different vantage points, and yet no one seems to explicitly say that they're connected, but they're the same word in the same type of context. So that's just Chomer L'machshava. I don't have anything on it. The other case I'll just throw out is the Ran, who has this interesting position, right? The Gemara in Yevamos paskens against the position of Rabbi Yochanan that women are not obligated in Puruvu. But the Ran says that's only half true. He says, "Da'afakav de'isha ena mitzvah b'perivirivya mikomakom yesh la mitzvah mipnei shehi misayad labal l'kai mitzvah." So he invents not a misayay and isurim, but it's a misayay and mitzvah. So if I am necessary for someone else to be kai mitzvahs, so I get a mitzvah. Now this is just the flip, because if you think about what we've been seeing, is some of the Rishonim said, Misayeya ain bo mamish if you're not necessary or you're not significant. Misayeya yesh bo mamish if you're significant or you're necessary, right? Well, this is, right, if we took it, like, say, to Shabbos, this is, Puravu is shnayim shasa'uha, right, where you need both people, right? And again, the Ran borrows the language of Misayeya, and I wonder whether he's seeing the same thing. He's saying that same type of calculus, where when you have multiple people doing an Avera, you have to start figuring out how essential was each one of them, how, right, was I necessary to perform it, blah, 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 blah. The same type of calculus is true in mitzvot also. And therefore, if someone turns out to be absolutely essential, even if they're not chayav in the mitzvah, then it must be that at some level they're mekayev the mitzvah. Just like when somebody is absolutely necessary for an Avera, right, they are considered part of the Avera. Again, no one directly points out that they're connected, but I think, right, they're related phenomena, right? The fact that you have this notion of misayeya in the context of mitzvot as well. So again, those are just two points to think about. I'm not really sure. I think they're definitely drawing on this sugya in some way, shape, or form. I think we'll stop it there, but I'll just summarize what you have here.
Can we go back to a misunderstanding Tosfot, or misunderstanding the other case? In the case of carrying, it is with a Jew. One Jew is able to carry the couch by himself, the other is not. The one that helps is Pater, the one that was able to carry it all by himself is Chayav. So that is similar to your Treif case.
Well, it's not quite, because in this Treif case, I'm not doing anything. I mean, I'm not eating, right? I mean, in a classic Lifnei Iver case, I'm not doing anything except for allowing someone else to sit.
Greater case, the case of carrying is...
Correct. I'm not saying they're identical. I'm saying, I wonder... Right, no, correct. They're not identical, right? They're obviously not identical because any Lifnei Iver Misayeh, in that sense, case, is where I'm not doing any Isser at all. The only thing I'm doing is enabling someone else to do an Isser rather than I might be chayav for carrying.
Right.
True. But I just wonder whether Tosfos is trying to fill in the blanks by using that same language of saying... You know, as sort of like a complimentary thing. By the way, there is another part to this, which is besides for your own spiritual culpability, is there, you know, culpability for the other person?
So I'm saying the difficulty of me seeing that expansion is that case, because then the guy who helped but was not strong enough to do it on his own would be chayav this.
Well, he might be. Correct. And he might be. And that's a discussion in the Rush in the beginning of Shabbos. And that is, meaning the Rush in the beginning of Shabbos has a question of when, you know, you have two people carrying the ani and whatever, and all types of, is the person, right, is the other person, like the first mission of Shabbos, right, where you have the ani and the balabais, is the ani who puts out his hand for the balabai to put in, is he totally exempt, or is he chayav midin lifnei iver, right? So yes, I mean, you're right. That's, he has two, right, he deals with that question. On the one hand, you could say, well, the Gemara never implies that he's chayav. On the other hand, you could say, no, maybe the Gemara only implies that he's not chayav personally, that they never discussed the question of whether you have, you know, a spiritual responsibility towards the other person that you just made his life easier, vis-a-vis Isurim, right? That's exactly what the Rush weighs in on, right? The Rush opens that question in that case. I think what might be implied is, yes, in all these cases, now, obviously that's not true in the Goy case. When the Goy is pulling it out, he's allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. That's why it doesn't appear there. Right? But you're right. In the case where it's a Jew, presumably, yeah, you, according to Tosfos, you are some, in some sense, right, you're violating the other type of Misayeya.
What's the Rush's conclusion in that Mishnah?
I can't remember the Rush's both deos. I think the Rush in the end says you do violate Lifnei Iver. Yeah. Okay, so what I gave you here in 23 and 24 is just this question of Avoda, where the Rambam, I'll just look at the Rambam and just highlight the problem, it can be the Radbaz. The Rambam, quoting the Gemara in Erechin, we'd seen before, said, Levim sh'avdu avoz ko'anim o'she siyeya levi b'malacha she'ena malach t'chayav en mizu b'dei shamayim sh'nemar lo yamusu. Ko'en sh'avad avoz levi eno mizu ela belosa say. The Gemara had seemed to have said that if a levi helped someone in the other Avoda, it's maybe also it's The Gemara seemed to say clearly he's not chayav misa because it's only misayaya. The question of whether it was asur midir rabbanan or what exactly was going on, the Gemara implied it was only asur midir rabbanan because it was only misayaya. The Rambam turns around and says, no, the conclusion is that it's misayaya, you know, d'araisa. This just creates a whole sort of host of problems, because the simple read of the Gemara in Erechin was that it was in line with most of the sugyas. The Gemara had said that Me'ikar Adin D'Araisa, if Levi helps the other Levi do his work, even though that's Aser, he's Pater because it's only Misayaya. The Rambam turns around and says what sounds like an Issa D'Rabbanan is a Chayiv Misa, but then that throws the Gemara in Erechin with the Gemara in Makot for another case where Misayaya is Chayiv. So that's really complicated, but I gave it to you just to know that it's out there. The Radbaz tries to deal with it in 24. And the Mari Kurkis also tries to deal with it. I gave that to you in 25. I'm not going to read it inside. We're going to move on next week because we have to move on. We've been on this for 3 weeks. But I gave it to you just so you, no one can accuse me of having left out one of the complicated sugyas. I did note that it exists. Okay, fine.